The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters.
We know of communities up and down the country who are livid, absolutely so angry, and they made this an electoral issue. It was a doorstep issue in this election, which is phenomenal. More and more people are going out there to swim and enjoy the natural environment, and they are seeing a place that they love being destroyed in front of their eyes and going, hang on a minute, don't we pay to clean this up? Don't we pay the water companies to do this? So they're cross about the fact they're paying something they're not getting. They are livid about seeing environments that they love being destroyed. And quite frankly, a lot of them are getting sick from doing the things that they love, and they are fed up, had enough. I'm Giles Bristow. I'm the Chief Executive of Surface Against Sewage. I'm a recovering lawyer. It's been a while since I was a lawyer. But I'm a water lover. I'm a surfer, kite surfer, wing foiler. I'm also RNLI crew here in Lyme Regis.
The Hearing.
Thank you so much for coming along, Giles. I'm really excited to talk to you today. And part of the reason I'm so excited is that every time I go on holiday with my family, if we're going to go to the beach, I check the weather and then I check your website, Surfers Against Sewage, to see if it's a good idea to swim in the beach that day. So you're somebody whose tools I use several times over the course of a year in my life. And I want to thank you for that. I feel sad that I have to thank anybody for that. And that's what sort of my lead in to my first question, really, is that I am very well aware there is a pollution problem in our seas and rivers in the UK. I think everybody at this point is very well aware of that pollution problem. But I wonder if sometimes we don't necessarily understand the scale of it and how that affects nature and how that affects people's lives. And I was hoping you could discuss that with me now.
Yeah, sure. So you describe it as a pollution problem. I would say it's a crisis. So we are absolutely at a tipping point where our rivers and our lakes and parts of our sea can no longer cope with the pollution that's going into it. So it is a very sad state of affairs. I mean, there is no river in the UK that is of good chemical status, and only 14% of rivers in the UK are of good ecological status. So these measures just show us how damaged these places are. And it's not only that, this is recent. This is so now. It is the accumulated behavior of all sorts of things pouring pollution into our rivers, into our lakes, and into the sea. And these, particularly the freshwater environments, are being pushed to the absolute edge of what they can handle. It's a toxic cocktail, if you like, of sewage, which is bacteria and viruses, microplastics, hydrocarbons, heavy metals, chemical pollutants, hormones. And I think that one of the really sad things is we barely know how badly affected these environments are. The science is telling us all the time, more and more, that the trend is bad, not getting better. So you mentioned you use our app, the Safer Seas and Rivers Service app, to check where you're going to swim. 100%, I would say, everybody, if you're going to go swimming in the environment, you must do that. And that's for sewage. But I would at the same time encourage you and your family and your friends to go into that environment, because we have beautiful rivers. We have stunning lakes. We have incredible coastlines. We're an island nation and it's beautiful. And it's restorative. It's great for our mental health and the physical benefits. And we want people to go in, and we want tourists to come here, and we want them to dive into. We want people to surf and swim as they like, but just be aware of where to go and when to go. So I'm really glad you brought up the app. It's a vital tool to keep public health, keep the public safe. That's really what it's all about.
So does your app cover rivers then? Because I used to be an avid wild swimmer in the rivers around where I live locally. We have some beautiful rivers up here in near the Peak District. And I have to say, over the last couple of years, I've stopped swimming in the rivers. Because it really didn't feel safe anymore. But does your app cover rivers? Is that something I could use to get back into the water around here?
So our app covers what are known as bathing waters. So they are those places that are classified as places to swim. Now, that doesn't mean they're classified as good to swim. It just means that is where people are swimming and it's been recognized as that, and that there should be a plan for monitoring those waters and then upgrading them, improving the environment over a period of time. So our app is generally around the coast. So it's beaches. It's the classic places you think of. So Lyme Regis, like where I am, we have two beaches on the app. But increasingly, there are rivers being designated or parts of rivers being designated as bathing water sites. So we have a campaign called Protecting Wild Waters, which aims to get 200 rivers classified over a five-year period. And the point of that is it's a lever for environmental improvement. If a section of a river or a beach is classified as a bathing water, the environment agency needs to monitor it. They must monitor it under the regulations. And then it's a tool for saying what investment needs to go in to improve the water quality in that area. So we see that as a way to improve the environmental quality of those places. So our app increasingly has river destinations, but there are just a handful at the moment. But you know what? What is amazing, one of the joys of this job, is that we work with communities all over the country who are campaigning for their stretch of river or their lake or their pond, or they're part of undesignated coastline to become designated to protect it, because those communities love these places and they're going to swim there and they want to see them improve. So that is genuinely one of the joys of this job, is just interacting with passionate people who are getting super proactive on environmental improvement and literally diving in. So yeah, it's wonderful.
I love that. And I think you're right. I think that being an island nation, there's something about water which is very deep in our culture and deep in our bones. And I see that when there's people that I speak to, is that that they're deeply worried about this issue. I'm going to kind of go back in time a little bit now. You are absolutely right. There's been an explosion in the pollution problem in the last few years, which has come on very, very fast. But Surfers Against Sewage as an organisation has been going since the 1990s. So what was it that happened all the way back then that allowed for the creation of this amazing group that you have?
Yeah, so Surfers Against Sewage was set up in the early 1990s, as you say, by a small band of pre-renegade surfers who were, and excuse me for saying it, but fed up of surfing and shit. Quite frankly, they were going in the water, enjoying what they do, but either getting sick from it or just having their experience just destroyed, because they would be seeing sewage and toilet paper and sanitary products in the water. Specifically, one of our founders, Chris Hyde, just the most amazing guy, he used to surf and he lives in Porthtowan. They nicknamed it Porth Tampon because sanitary product would be in the water and they'd see them all the time. And it was gross. It was grossing them out. Mm. But critically, they were realizing people were getting really sick from just enjoying our waters. And they were fed up to the back teeth. So they got a couple of camper vans. They put them in the car park near St. Agnes. And they used to hold meetings and rallies there. Then they moved into the village hall as the numbers grew. And the village hall became the base to operate from. And then it grew and grew and it, you know, had a membership, and Surfers Against Sewage became what is one of the leading forces in driving environmental conservation in this marine environment that we know now. And now we have hundreds of thousands of members, all who are passionate about campaigning for the places that they swim and surf and walk and paddle and all this kind of thing. Seeking real change. And the reason for that is this country has bumped along the bottom of poor bathing water quality for decades. So even now, after investment over decades or whatever, underinvestment over decades, we still rank below Albania in terms of our water quality because our infrastructure is old, it's crumbling, and we have systemically underinvested in our sewage infrastructure, as well as having a pattern of agricultural practice that inputs agricultural runoff and pollution into our waterways, and then we have highways on top. So then there's industrial effluent. So this is what's causing this toxic cocktail that's damaging our environment and putting public health at real risk. And it's, you mentioned we're an island nation, and this is deep in our culture. This is so true. It literally hurts people to see these places that they love being destroyed in front of their eyes. I live in Lyme Regis, a few hundred yards from the River Lym. It's a beautiful little iconic river in a small river valley that flows out onto the beaches here. And you look at the river, some days it stinks. It absolutely smells because the sewage works operated by Southwest Water. In times of rainfall, not necessarily exceptional, but in times of rainfall, sewage is pumped out or it discharges into the river. And that's leading to sewage fungus, which smothers the river and makes the ecology, it's losing its resilience. It has been declared ecologically dead, but it's not quite that bad now. But it comes and goes. It's in really poor state. And the whole local community talk about it. We talk about it all the time, not just because of my job. People talk about it generally. They are sad about it, really sad. The river is a central part of our life here. We do tons of stuff in and around the river. And it really upsets people. And then, I'm sort of just rabbiting on now, but it also, freshwater health and the health of our beaches and the health of our seas is part of the fundamentals of our economy as well. And we are aware of people's livelihoods and businesses going down the pan, being destroyed because these places are being polluted to the extent that other people are starting to say, do you know what? I just don't want to go there. So we have a friend up in Scarborough, Steve. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy, been a surfer all his life, runs a surf school on the beach there. And he's closed the business because all of last year and the year before, the beaches were red flagged due to the water quality, and he obviously didn't have any customers. I mean, this is chronic. It's undermining the fundamentals of what makes this country fantastic and a large part of our tourist economy. So, yeah, the impacts are huge. It's very, very sad.
So we've got this toxic cocktail, and we've got some really horrendous impacts both on the health of people, the health of our rivers, and the health of our economy. We have environmental laws. Why aren't they working for us?
Yeah, I mean, dear me, this is part of the tragedy, if you like, because we have pretty much all of the laws we need to keep these environments safe and to keep people healthy, to protect public health. So the laws that emanated from Europe back in the day, but you know, the Waste Industry, Water Industry Act in 1991 and 1994, the Urban Wastewater Treatment Act, regulations, these drive the water companies to effectively treat wastewater and only discharge sewage in exceptional circumstances. So, right, that's the base principle, right? So, in theory, it should be exceptional discharges. But what we've seen over time is a lowering of that bar. What we've come to understand as exceptional circumstances has dropped and dropped and dropped. Now, this isn't necessarily a conspiracy between government and the regulators, whatever, but it's just that there has been an erosion of this. And so we're seeing sewage being discharged into these environments on a much more frequent basis, and it's having that direct effect on the environment and on public health. So this is a consequence of underinvestment in the regulator. So the Environment Agency has seen its budget slashed. So the amount that it can monitor has been drastically decimated. And at the same time, we see the water companies have a regime of operator self-monitoring. So they're marking their own homework. Between these two things, you know, the standards have slipped and exceptional circumstances isn't so exceptional. I hear all the time, people ring me all the time, say, do you know what? We only had a little bit of rain today, yet the CSO, the combined sewage overflow, is discharging. What's going on? So that's because of underinvestment in the infrastructure. It's the aging Victorian designed infrastructure as well. And then on top of it, just government has not been on top of this issue. We've let it slide. And perhaps it's in part because we're not paying enough for water. Ofwat, the financial regulator, has depressed the customer contributions, so prices for a long time, which is maybe a part of a political project, but these things come together. They mean we've unfortunately a systemic slide into an industry that is very polluting, and I would say this, but really put profit over the need to tackle pollution. So the privatized water industry in England different in other parts of the UK, but in England, has 100% prioritised making shareholder returns over adequate investment to keep improving the environment and keep the public safe. So it's a pretty sorry tale. The glimmer of hope, there is a glimmer of hope, definitely, which is the public are aware of this. We've been campaigning on this for 35 years. We know of communities up and down the country who are livid, absolutely so angry, and they made this an electoral issue. It was a doorstep issue in this election, which is phenomenal. Who would have thought a Victorian sewage system would be an electoral issue in 2024? It's absolutely amazing. Partly through campaigning, but also more and more people are going out there to swim and enjoy the natural environment, and they are seeing places that they love being destroyed in front of their eyes and going, hang on a minute, don't we pay to clean this up? Don't we pay the water companies to do this? So they're cross about the fact they're paying something they're not getting. They are livid about seeing environments that they love being destroyed. And quite frankly, a lot of them are getting sick from doing the things that they love, and they are fed up, had enough. And, you know, the mandate, I think, that's gone to this new Labour government is sort this shit out, because it is no good.
My next question was going to be, what laws would you bring in to change the problem? But it's really interesting to me that you're saying, actually, we have every law that we need. And as you were talking, and I was thinking, it's probably not even just the environmental protection laws, is it? It's company directors' duties, actually have duties within them that require the company directors to take the environment into account. And, you know, so it feels like actually legally we're covered across all the bases. So in order to make that legal regime really work, because this is what's really interesting to me as a lawyer, is you have all the laws, but that isn't enough. And in this situation, it very clearly isn't enough. So what is it that we as lawyers need to be aware of? What's the next step after we've got the laws to correct the problem that the laws are there to correct? What would you do?
Well, we absolutely need government to be on top of the situation. So yeah, you're right. We have the laws. This is fascinating. We have the laws, but they're not being enforced fully, properly. The monitoring isn't there. The reporting is kind of slightly squiffy. And then we have, you know, the lack of teeth, which is really about money and people and skills to be able to go out, do the monitoring, do the regulation, and then bring people to court if there's continued non-compliance, which there is. Last week, three water companies, Thames, Yorkshire and Northumbrian, were fined a record-breaking £168 million between them. 9% of Thames' annual turnover was their fine. And these are large sums, but these are new. These are record-breaking because they are new, because it's the result of a three-year investigation. Oh, and by the way, every water company is under investigation for criminal responsibility for sewage discharge. So they're not alone. Others will follow. So this is a system that has slid. So we have the laws, but we don't have the practice. We haven't had the practice. No one's really been on top of this and saying, hang on, what's really going on here? Apart from NGOs like ourselves, others who are saying, whoa, 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 something is out of whack here. So there is this need for better, being on top of the situation, being better understanding of what's really happening here. But I would say we've got to a stage, though, where those laws are of themselves not now adequate.
Right.
We think that what we're really pushing Steve Reed and the new government to do is do a root and branch review of how broken this system is. I mentioned earlier, we have an understanding of how polluted our waterways and our beaches are, but not a complete picture. We have an understanding of how broken this system is and what the investment is required, but again, not a full picture. We don't really have, in the £168 million fine, one of the things that was blamed for this lack of compliance as well was poor board level and management, senior management practices. So there's also sort of a culture that needs to change in these water companies. 100%. They obscure and they try to, not give the data. They're quite untransparent about the environmental data. They are difficult to extract this information from. And then there's been a lot of obfuscation around what really needs to happen to sort this out. So we would like a root and branch review, moving quickly into recommendations, which are got to be about value for customer money, but driving environmental improvement and keeping the public and public health safe. So we think that's got to be a priority of this government. It's definitely a priority of people at large. And so we need to see that reflected. We need to see it happen now. We have sister campaigning organizations in other parts of the country, like the awesome Save Windermere campaign. And they are truly worried that Windermere has a season or two seasons left in it of blue-green algae blossom, of chronic sewage pollution. And genuinely, we are approaching those stages where, are we crossing a tipping point? Will these environments always have a way back? We don't know is the truth, but we mustn't play Russian roulette with it. We have got to sort it out, because these are, you know, just the most fabulous, fabulous places. So we have laws, we need some new stuff, but really right now it's so broken, we need root and branch reform.
The hearing. On the outside, you're a lawyer, calm and cool, but inside there's a passion to perform, a drive to be absolutely on your game. You prepare hour after hour, day after day in the pursuit of excellence, relying on superior resources, serious preparation, and total confidence. That's the advantage we give you. Be your best with Thomson Reuters Practical Law.
From the war in Gaza.
There are a huge network of tunnels underneath. It looks like a spider web.
To the front lines in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
No matter where the story is, Reuters World News Podcast is there. We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes, every weekday. I'm your host, Kim Vanell. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think there's a problem in water company boardrooms around education levels? Because in my other job, one of the things that I talk to people about and I hit all the time is that some boards are doing very well and they're very well educated, but a lot of boards don't have anybody with the expertise on them around environment, around climate. Now, it seems to me that if you are sitting on a board of a water company, it should almost be a requirement that you actually have an understanding of the ecology of water systems and what that means. Is there an education gap for some of these boards?
So the truth is, I don't know, but I would suspect so, because we would be seeing different decision-making cultures if that was the case. I think what we've had in a privatized system over the last 30 years, with massive dividends going out, so about roughly about 80 billion leaving the industry over the last 30 years, I think what we've had is a primacy of profit creation for shareholder dividends. So mindsets have been driven around that. How do we reduce our O&M costs? How do we maximize our turnover? How do we leverage hardest our customer income? Which, by the way, a large part of that now goes to service the debt that they've loaded up to pay shareholder dividends. So it's a kind of strange money go round. So the expertise in boards clearly is around financial engineering and making the most of this system. There is genuinely really good engineering thinking. I'm sure many of the companies are doing what they can with the amount of resource they give themselves to, you know, improve the infrastructure. But I would say definitely not enough. In 2024, we can read a newspaper over someone's shoulder from space, and we can do all sorts of extraordinary things, even with the iPhone in our pocket. Yet, we still don't know what's being discharged into our rivers. We have only just got 100% monitoring in England. In Scotland, only 4% of combined sewer overflows are monitored. This is literally to know whether a flap is open or closed. It's so simple to know whether we're discharging sewage. And with this incredible technology, data, AI, machine learning, you know, you name it, this industry is in the stone, well, it's in the Victorian age still, and is massively unacceptable. So what do we need? 100%, we need better environmental thinking holistically about catchment solutions, the role that nature can play, the role that soft surfacing in urban areas can play. We need to link up with planning. We need to apply technology, the awesome technology we have, to be able to monitor the environment and monitor the systems, to make sure that we know that we're on top of them and O&M can be planned for, all that kind of good stuff. So there's a bunch of skills that need to go into these water companies. But fundamentally, do we need to create a system that actually prioritizes public health and the environment over profit? In my view, 100% we do. Because we've got to aim for a more sustainable future across the economy. And the water industry has got to be a key part of that.
So I love the app. We've talked a lot about that. What is it that Surfers Against Sewage does that maybe that we don't see, that I don't see? I see the app. But what is it that I don't see that you are doing behind the scenes to change the status quo? I'm really interested to hear more about that.
Sure. So behind the scenes, we are a campaigning organization. So you've got the app, but I guess a lot of people also see the in front of the scenes stuff that we do, which is the paddle out. So we have a national paddle out protest every year. Thousands of people join us to paddle out into waters, reclaim our beaches, reclaim our riverbanks, and say, this is not yours, polluters. This is ours. This is our environment. We want it back. And that captures media attention. Then we can use that to drive public awareness. But the stuff people don't see, I guess, is behind the scenes, we are talking to ministers. And in the run-up to the election, we spent a lot of time with all of the political parties. Because we're a charity. We cannot favour a party. We favour radical policy and good policy that's going to drive change, not parties. So we helped draft manifestos. We were pushing for as much change as possible. So we're influencing there. But fundamentally what we're doing is bringing the will and mandate of communities to this whole discussion. More behind the scenes, I guess, for some. What some people don't maybe appreciate is across the country, we have a network of reps. They work in communities campaigning locally on water quality issues. So here in Lyme Regis, there's an amazing group, the River Lim Action Group, who are campaigning locally. They work with the local authority. They work with the council. They work with the water company. And they're doing loads of citizen science. So they're collecting their own data to challenge the orthodoxy, to challenge the Environment Agency's data and others, to say, look, here's the real state of this situation. So we work with hundreds of groups like that. We work with those campaigning groups who are looking for to classify their waters as bathing waters to drive environmental improvement. We work with schools. So we have a whole education program. We work with nearly 1,000 schools on, we call them plastic-free communities, and ocean schools. So it's really connecting children and teachers with nature to say why this is really important. And then those young people and those teachers become ocean activists and they join us in our campaigning. We work on plastic-free communities. About 3,000 communities across the country are driving down single-use plastic and connecting with water quality issues. So not only are they driving change locally, they are also helping us lobby for better policy, and they give us our mandate and our reach for change. So we do a ton of stuff in the background like that. We're always working on policy and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we are there listening to communities who love the water, who love the places that they live. We're connecting their stories, their data, and their desires for a better environment with national policy. And that's what we do. We then go in, we demand it, hopefully loudly. We use a lot of communications. We dress up in wetsuits. We've got our surfboards. We go to Parliament. We have banners and we make a lot of noise. And that's all about attention, grabbing the attention of the media to say, this is an issue you have to look at. And so that's kind of the way we operate, really.
I love that. And I think one of the things that I love about that so much is it reminds me of, I think it's a George Monbiot quote. You know, this is a mangled version of a George Monbiot quote, yeah. In which case I'm very sorry, George. I think he says that people don't protect what they don't know.
Yeah. They protect what they love and what they know. That's right.
They protect what they love and what they know. And by, you know, talking to children and adults and getting them to go out and experience the rivers and the beaches, and you see it and you think, oh, no, this is I don't like this. I want this to be better. I want this to change. And it seems to me that that's one of the things that you're doing so perfectly and so well is that facilitation.
Just witness the joy in the summer of children playing on a beach and in the sea. You know, it's almost... it's something a lot of people can identify with. If you're lucky enough to have that access, not everyone does, but if you're lucky enough to have it, it speaks deeply to our soul, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Playing in the sand, swimming in the sea, you know, playing around rock pools and seeing that kind of thing. In the run-up to the election, we did a funny thing. We did something called the Turd Tour. So we got a double-decker bus, and it was an open-top double-decker bus, and we wrapped it, and down the side of the double-decker bus, it said, In the UK, we discharged 604,833 times into our rivers and into our sewage. On the back of the bus, it said voters against floaters. And it was a humorous tour. And everywhere we went, we had our gas masks on. We had our surfboards with end sewage pollution and cut the crap written on them. And we drove 3,000 miles around the country, interacting with thousands of people who came up to us and just said, we are so glad you're here. We're a community fighting for this. And we need a national voice. So we'd love to join with you to make this electoral issue. And we held hustings on the beach. We've got political candidates in the sand, you know, the sand between their toes, telling us about what they were going to do locally to improve their beach or their riverbank. And it was an incredible thing. We just thought the politicians are going around in their own buses. We're going to have a bus and do this. But what we got was feedback from people going, we have to do something about this. This is our home. This is where we live. This is the places we love. We want it better. And so that gave us a huge boost. We just came back from that tour, 2 weeks on the road. We were exhausted, right? Protesting, paddling and partying. It was great fun. It was absolutely brilliant. But we came back exhausted, but we came back so energized with the voices of thousands of people who just said, yeah, let's crack on. Let's get this shit sorted because it is not right. We cannot have this pollution anymore and we can do something about it. And it just gave us a huge boost.
I love that. I love that so much. So I've got a couple of notes that I want to end on. And the first one is, in a future world where we have properly fixed this and we have protected our water, what does that world look like to you?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I mean, it is a world without fear, where my children can dive into the water where we live, they dive off the North Wall here in Nine Readers, and they're diving into clean, healthy water, and they're interacting with an environment full of biodiversity. It's really enriched. This is a place that is the fundamentals of our society and economy, and we should be able to enjoy it. So it's free of fear, it's healthy, it's beautiful, it speaks to our soul, and it is something that is helping us, by the way, tackle climate change, tackling the biodiversity crisis. You know, it's doing so much positive stuff on our behalf. The ocean gives us 50% of the oxygen that we breathe. Every second breath is from the ocean. Like, this is vital to life. And so we need to get it out of the emergency room into a state that is restored, healthy, and making us all thrive. That's what, to me, good would be looking like. So that's why we're working hard.
I love it. No. And then my last question. This is a podcast going out that is listened to, I hope, by lawyers.
Right.
And you have told me that we have a system where our laws are there. By and large, the laws are there. So if there are lawyers out there listening to this, maybe corporate lawyers, environmental lawyers, mergers and acquisitions lawyers, what's the one thing that you would like to say to them? Is there a thing that they could do in their professional lives which could help propel us towards that future of your children diving off the North Wall?
Yeah, I guess so. So as lawyers, are we calibrated well? Is the spirit and intention of these laws in your work, are you delivering upon them? Or have you been part of the system that's letting it slide? If that's gnawing away at you, you know, as a lawyer, then think, what's really intended by this law? We are meant to be holding these water companies to account. We are meant to be improving the environment and keeping people safe. At the moment, we're on a one-way trip to just complete, pollution and meltdown. We can turn this around. What's amazing about watery environments is they can heal. They can heal quite quickly. So as lawyers, think about the work you're doing. Can it be a useful tool for improving the environment? If so, let's get together. Join us. I'm happy to have a conversation with anyone. Join Surf Against Sewage. Join River Action. Join Greenpeace. There are lots of organizations that will help you flex your legal tools in favor of positive change. So check your calibration. That's what I would say.
Thank you so much, Giles. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I really have. It's living and breathing and wanting to get back into swimming into the rivers has been really important to me. And so being able to talk to you has been a real joy.
And I've really enjoyed it too. If you ever fancy coming for a swim down in St. Agnes, where our HQ is,
I would love that.
Come join us, come for a surf. We'd love to see you there.
The Hearing, a legal podcast from Thomson Reuters. To find out more, go to tr.com/The Hearing or subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.